And that's it, Evan said. I know a little more, mostly from the newspapers and two chats I had with Mr. Milner. Call me Ted. Ted, then. Evans did not seem to take to Ted's first name as easily as he had to Amy's. I know that Mr. Rainey had what was probably a schizophrenic episode in which he was two people, and that neither of them had any idea they were actually existing in the same body. I know that one of them was named John Shooter. I know from Herbert Creekmore's deposition that Mr. Rainey imagined this Shooter was hounding him over a story called Sewing Season, and that Mr. Creekmore had a copy of the magazine in which that story appeared sent up so Mr. Rainey could prove that he had published first. The magazine arrived shortly before you did, Amy. It was found in the house. The Federal Express envelope it came in was on the seat of your ex-husband's Buick. But he cut the story out, didn't he? Ted asked. Not just the story. The contents page as well. He was careful to remove every trace of himself. He carried a Swiss Army knife, and that was probably what he used. The missing pages were in the Buick's glove compartment. In the end, the existence of that story became a mystery even to him, Amy said softly. Evans looked at her, eyebrows raised. Beg pardon? She shook her head. Nothing. Well, I think I've told you everything I can, Evans said. Anything else would be pure speculation. I'm an insurance investigator, after all, not a psychiatrist. He was two men, Amy said. He was himself, and he became a character he created. Ted believes that the last name, Shooter, was something Mort picked up and stored in his head when he found out Ted came from a little town called Shooter's Knob, Tennessee. I'm sure he's right. Mort was always picking out character names just that way, like anagrams almost. I don't know the rest of it. I can only guess. I do know that when a film studio dropped its option on his novel The Delacorte Family, Mort almost had a nervous breakdown. They made it clear, and so did Herb Creekmore, that they were concerned about an accidental similarity, and they understood he never could have seen the screenplay, which was called The Home Team. There was no question of plagiarism, except in Mort's head. His reaction was exaggerated, abnormal. It was like stirring a stick around in what looks like a dead campfire and uncovering a live coal. You don't think he created John Shooter just to punish you, do you? Evans asked. No. Shooter was there to punish Mort. I think... She paused and adjusted her shawl, pulling it a little more tightly about her shoulders. Then she picked up her teacup with a hand which wasn't quite steady. I think that Mort stole somebody's work sometime in the past, she said. Probably quite far in the past, because everything he wrote from the organ grinder's boy on was widely read. It would have come out, I think. I doubt that he even actually published what he stole, but I think that's what happened, and I think that's where John Shooter really came from. Not from the film company dropping his novel, or from my time with Ted, and not from the divorce. Maybe all those things contributed, but I think the root goes back to a time before I knew him. Then, when he was alone at the lake house...
Shooter came, Evan said quietly. He came and accused him of plagiarism. Whoever Mr. Rainey stole from never did, so in the end he had to punish himself. But I doubt if that was all, Amy. He did try to kill you.
No, she said. That was Shooter. He raised his eyebrows. Ted looked at her carefully and then drew the pipe out of his pocket again. The real Shooter.
I don't understand you.
She smiled her wan smile. I don't understand myself. That's why I'm here. I don't think telling this serves any practical purpose. Mort's dead, and it's over. But it may help me. It may help me to sleep better.
Then tell us, by all means, Evan said.
You see, when we went down to clean out the house, we stopped at the little store in town, Bowie's. Ted filled the gas tank. It's always been self-service at Bowie's, and I went in to get some things. There was a man in there. Sonny Trotz, who used to work with Tom Greenleaf. Tom was the older of the two caretakers who were killed. Sonny wanted to tell me how sorry he was about Mort. And he wanted to tell me something else, too, because he saw Mort the day before Mort died and meant to tell him, so he said. It was about Tom Greenleaf, something Tom told Sonny while they were painting the Methodist Parish Hall together. Sonny saw Mort after that, but didn't think to tell him right away, he said. Then he remembered that it had something to do with Greg Carstairs.
The other dead man.
Yes. So he turned around and called, but Mort didn't hear him. And the next day, Mort was dead.
What did Mr. Greenleaf tell this guy?
That he thought he might have seen a ghost, Amy said calmly.
They looked at her, not speaking.
Sonny said Tom had been getting forgetful lately, and that Tom was worried about it. Sonny thought it was no more than the ordinary sort of forgetfulness that settles in when a person gets a little older. But Tom had nursed his wife through Alzheimer's disease 5 or 6 years before, and he was terrified of getting it himself and going the same way. According to Sonny, if Tom forgot a paintbrush, he spent half the day obsessing about it. Tom said that was why, when Greg Carstairs asked him if he recognized the man he'd seen Mort Rainey talking to the day before, or if he would recognize him if he saw him again, Tom said he hadn't seen anyone with Mort, that Mort had been alone.
There was the snap of a match. Ted Milner had decided to light his pipe after all. Evans ignored him. He was leaning forward in his chair, his gaze fixed intently on Amy Milner. Let's get this straight. According to the Sonny Truths,
Trots.
According to him, Tom Greenleaf did see Mort with someone?
Not exactly, Amy said. Sonny thought if Tom believed that, believed it for sure, he wouldn't have lied to Greg. What Tom said was he didn't know what he'd seen, that he was confused, that it seemed safer to say nothing about it at all. He didn't want anybody, particularly Greg Carstairs, who was also in the caretaking business, to know how confused he was. And most of all, he didn't want anybody to think that he might be getting sick the way his late wife had gotten sick.
I'm not sure I understand this. I'm sorry.
According to Sonny, she said, Tom came down Lake Drive in his scout and saw Mort standing by himself where the lakeside path comes out.
Near where the bodies were found?
Yes, very near. Mort waved. Tom waved back. He drove by. Then, according to what Sonny says, Tom looked in his rearview mirror and saw another man with Mort and an old station wagon, although neither the man nor the car had been there 10 seconds before. The man was wearing a black hat, he said. But you could see right through him, and the car, too.
Oh, Amy, Ted said softly. The man was bullshitting you, big time.
She shook her head. I don't think Sonny is smart enough to make up such a story. He told me Tom thought he ought to get in touch with Greg and tell him he might have seen such a man after all, that it would be all right if he left out the see-through part. But Sonny said the old man was terrified. He was convinced that it was one of two things. Either he was coming down with Alzheimer's disease, or he'd seen a ghost.
Well, it's certainly creepy, Evan said. And it was. The skin on his arms and back had crinkled into goose flesh for a moment or two. But it's hearsay. Hearsay from a dead man, in fact.
Yes, but there's the other thing.
She set her teacup on the desk, picked up her purse, and began to rummage in it.
When I was cleaning out Mort's office, I found that hat, that awful black hat, behind his desk. It gave me a shock, because I wasn't expecting it. I thought the police must have taken it away as evidence or something. I hooked it out from behind there with a stick. It came out upside down with the stick inside it. I used the stick to carry it outside and dump it in the trash cabinet. Do you understand? Ted clearly didn't. Evans clearly did.
You didn't want to touch it.
That's right. I didn't want to touch it. It landed right side up on one of the green trash bags. I'd swear to that. Then, about an hour later, I went out with a bag of old medicines and shampoos and things from the bathroom. When I opened the lid of the garbage cabinet to put it in, the hat was turned over again. And this was tucked into the sweatband.
She pulled a folded sheet of paper from her purse and offered it to Evans with a hand that still trembled minutely.
It wasn't there when the hat came up from behind the desk. I know that.
Evans took the folded sheet and just held it for a moment. He didn't like it. It felt too heavy, and the texture was somehow wrong.
I think there was a John Shooter, she said. I think he was Mort's greatest creation, a character so vivid that he actually did become real. And I think that this is a message from a ghost.
He took the slip of paper and opened it. Written halfway down was this message.
Mrs., I am sorry for all the trouble. Things got out of hand. I am going back to my home now. I got my story, which is all I came for in the first place. It is called Crowfoot Mile, and it is a crackerjack. Yours truly, John Shooter.
The signature was a bald scrawl below the neat lines of script. Is this your late husband's signature, Amy? Evans asked.
No, she said. Nothing like it.
The three of them sat in the office looking at one another. Fred Evans tried to think of something to say and could not. After a while, the silence and the smell of Ted Milner's pipe became more than any of them could stand. So Mr. and Mrs. Milner offered their thanks, said their goodbyes, and left his office to get on with their lives as best they could. And Fred Evans got on with his own as best he could. And sometimes, late at night, both he and the woman who had been married to Morton Rainey woke from dreams in which a man in a round-crowned black hat looked at them from sun-faded eyes caught in nets of wrinkles. He looked at them with no love, but they both felt, with an odd kind of stern pity. It was not a kind expression, and it left no feeling of comfort. But they also both felt, in their different places, that they could find room to live with that look and to tend their gardens.